This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen-live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9.
Melbourne's FM. Most lovable radio station, Joy
94.9. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, create it, change the point, it's impressive. Work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick, rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, jam and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pause it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch it, date it, name it, read it, tune it.
Good afternoon, welcome to Techno Gaze, the show where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets and technology. My name is Mark, and we've got an exciting show lineup for you today. With me in the studio, popped down from Sydney this week, is Jason.
Hello,
Jason.
Just popped in.
Just popped in.
It seems to be like a regularly monthly thing. Regular monthly thing now.
A regularly monthly thing.
I was hoping no one would notice I said that.
Dum, dum.
I'm going to refrain from saying things about regular and monthly.
And wow, we've gone there already.
I said refrain.
Now, also in the studio with us is ye of blue hair and humorous Windows t-shirt, Raina.
Hello.
Hi, Raina.
Raina did already get called Smurfette at breakfast this morning. Oh.
Unprompted, I might add.
That's right.
It wasn't by us.
No, that's right. No.
For a change.
By the witty barista.
The witty barista.
Yeah.
I think that should be like a blog.
No, yeah, I think it's actually a niche Tumblr. Oh.
And joining us in the studio today as well is the winner of the 5th annual Dirty Spanner Award.
Oh, Mark.
Isn't it the Rusty Wrench?
It is the Rusty Wrench. It is not the Dirty Spanner.
That's less fun.
I have seen the wrench in question and it is a little bit rusty.
Well, yes.
Is it rusty through overuse?
Now, for those who are unfamiliar with what we're talking about, it is actually a legitimate award, right?
It is a legitimate award. Oh, you can see it on the fine website known as Wikipedia. There is a picture of it.
That means it's obviously real.
It is obviously real. It's on Wikipedia.
Not only do we have a winner of such an award in the studio with us, but someone who also has their own Wikipedia page now.
Apparently. It is so alleged.
I have an IMDb entry.
Ooh, that's way cooler.
Oh, I feel left out now. I've got a Twitter account.
Yay.
Mark.
And so do we, isn't that right?
Hopefully we haven't appeared
lovely
on Douchebags of Grindr.
Lovely segue there. We have a Twitter account. Twitter account is?
It's TechnoGaze. TechnoGaze. Where are we following it right now? Have we got it up on the screen somewhere?
It is up on my screen.
Excellent. So if you tweet us, you can let us, you can show us something that you want to
show us your
about.
Love.
Yes. There's also other ways of contacting us here at Joy 94.9. There is an SMS number, 0427-JOY-949. And you can use the Joy smartphone app to contact us as well through the same means.
Listen to us.
Yes, and listen.
Is there anything it can't do?
No, it's amazing.
joy.org.au/listen-live.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That was nice. That's going in the next PSA.
You can also email us onair@joy.org.au.
Can I just try that? It's onair@joy.org.au.
Thanks, Richard Mercer.
Mark, I hear we have a show to do.
Yes.
What?
On today's show, we've got a few things lined up for you today. A general news roundup. Of course, we do like to keep across technology news in general. So we'll kick off with that. We have a bit of gaming news as well, with the pioneering first-person shooter game, Doom, having turned 20 years old this week.
Oh, do you feel old?
I do a little bit, yes.
I do too.
Yes. The Xbox One Also came out this week, so we'll talk a bit about that.
Didn't it come out a bit earlier?
Oh, maybe, well, might have been last.
Mm. Well, it's been a few weeks.
Yes.
Maybe we should talk about the fact that none of us are actually sure when the Xbox One got released.
Oh, no, I definitely remember going to a party.
I seem to recall many monuments around the world being lit up green, including Centrepoint Tower in Sydney.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Exactly right. But it is, of course, close to Christmas, so I think it's on everyone's minds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We'll be donning our tinfoil hats later with some disturbing stats of government surveillance requests.
Tinfoil hats on Technogaze?
It's not a party hat, but it is a tinfoil hat this time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And it's that time of year. We'll finish off with some ideas for your nerd loved ones, some Christmas presents that you might want to buy for a tech nerd.
That's right.
Well, let's get on to some news. Now, this is a bit of the first one on our run sheet here. Browser makers are following Google's lead and revoking rogue certificates.
Mm.
Mm.
Now, what does that actually mean in the real world?
So when I'm connecting to a secured site, an SSL site with the HTTPS...
So like your bank or whatever.
Yeah. There's certificates involved in that process, and
Are they framed? I mean, what does a certificate look... No, sorry.
You can actually view them if you click in the little in the URL bar of your web browser.
Oh, that's right. So it often says, you know, you need to check the certificate of this site, and would you like to view it or continue? And most of the time you just go, meow, whatever, continue, right?
And and one thing that's not widely known is your browser, when you download it, comes preloaded with a certain set of trusts or trusted certificates. So certificate authorities. Yeah.
Well, that was in stereo.
Jinx.
Who can't talk then now?
Oh, I free you both. Radio doesn't work if people can't talk.
So the certificate authority, there's been a few of them that have been marked as not trustworthy anymore, and therefore have been revoked their certificate authority or their actual trustworthiness by...
That's right.
Google has been revoked, and of course Google make
been
crime.
Revoked? Did the revoking, maybe.
Yeah. All right.
No, Google. Oh, can you imagine if Google's certificates actually got revoked?
Their
My
own.
Goodness.
Wouldn't that just break the entire internet at this point?
It would break a great deal of it. So a lot of these certificates, though, they come from, you know, smaller signing authorities or certification authorities. So one of them is the, you know, subsidiaries of the French government, for example.
Yep.
It's quite worrying if you, for example, you visit a trust site like your bank or, a social network or something like that, and it pops up with a thing and says, we can't do this thing now because we don't trust this thing anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't look good. It's not a good look for anyone. So it's actually quite as well as the privacy and things, it's actually quite a harmful thing for the brand.
So that's actually one of the things that I find happens quite constantly. I work in web development. It's one of the very common things is that a company forgets to renew its security certificate.
Mm.
It happens a lot, and then it's a bit of a mad panic on the day because suddenly SSL errors start cropping up from particular browsers and, yeah.
Someone forgot to put that reminder in their calendar.
Exactly. And it's almost like domain name renewals because we went through this whole phase about 10 years ago about domain name renewal fraud and spam, and people had to develop secure ways of actually being reminded when your domain name's about to expire, and people have to now do the same thing for certificates.
Yeah, yeah. And it's such a prevalent part of what we do these days, right? So many sites are, in fact, secured. With SSL?
Well, it's been a trend over the last few years is that sites like Google and Facebook, and I don't think Twitter's actually done it, but their default protocol, if you hit the site via HTTP, it will just immediately redirect you into HTTPS.
Yeah.
And we're talking about, so the intermediaries, the ones that people, as a website owner, you might buy off a certificate authority, the certificate that you want. So entire certificate authorities are being revoked, which means that, you know, it's not just single websites that disappear or that stop working. It's actually, hundreds or thousands or however many customers are up.
And here's something that's a little bit scary. So even though these things are being revoked in more modern browsers, a third of people using Windows still use Windows XP.
Mm-hmm.
And those revocations won't be sent to Windows XP because, of course, no updates are available like that anymore. So
yes.
Microsoft has already advised, you know, tough. Which is a little bit scary because, you know, it could leave you, especially in a corporate environment where there are a lot of people using Windows XP still for various reasons.
Mm.
Actual attacks could happen.
Yeah. It is a bit of tough love from Microsoft in the XP stakes now. It's like, well,
it's 12 years old.
Yeah, it's such an ancient operating system. Like, look, you just said like some companies still use them for corporate reasons, but there really should not be. No such reasons should exist. It's amazing. Where I work, I've seen there are still machines that have Windows XP installed on them, and every time I go over to that person's machine, I'm going, oh my God, you've got Windows XP. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Now, shall we move on to the next
Indeed.
Item, which is some LG TVs have been caught spying on us.
That's right. How
on
scary.
Us personally.
Yes. No. Me. Well, I don't actually have one of these.
This is actually, you know, the George Orwell 1984 book In the Real World. You had big screens looking at you telling your government what you're doing. In this case, it's not your government. It's just, you know, the manufacturer of your TV. But this is totally spooky tinfoil hat stuff.
I'd like to see a tinfoil.
So wouldn't we all?
So let's talk about what it was actually doing.
Yeah.
When you are watching television on one of these things, it sends information back to LG saying when you change your channel.
Mm-hmm.
And how long you might have been watching it for, and also the names of media files that you might have on a thumb drive or on your local network plugged in.
So that might be The Lion King or The Lion King's long appendage.
Right.
So the guy who actually discovered this, in order to actually seed information that he could detect into his stream, he played a file called midgetporn.mkv,
yeah.
And then he searched his HTTP logs for midget porn.
See, this is what's wrong about this kind of thing is, you know, whatever you watch in the privacy of your lounge room is up to you, and you don't really want to be sharing that with the manufacturer of your television unit.
And it's a growing trend, isn't it, that smart TVs are becoming more and more prevalent. There's, you know, a growing trend of TVs being connected to the internet that has not necessarily been the case before. Like, think back into the 90s. What purpose would you have for your TV to be connected to the internet? Now that we've seen, we actually are able to consume content directly to our TVs from the web.
It all started when I wanted to watch YouTube in the lounge room.
That's right. That's right. So now they have the capability of turning that around and using that capability, that internet connectedness, back on us again.
So my question is, what's the legitimate use for LG wanting to know what you're watching? Okay. Yes, Miss Rayner.
So there's a couple of reasons why you might legitimately need, well, maybe not need, but you'd like to collect some information. And one of the things that LG uses this for, by the looks of it, because the gentleman that discovered this actually saw this happen to him, is advertising targeted on the home screen, which, again, maybe isn't for the benefit of the viewer, but certainly is for the benefit of advertisers. So that's some platform that they can monetize. And the second thing, of course, is things to do with TV ratings. So if you actually want to measure TV ratings in a very accurate and specific way, rather than using the old Nielsen diary, then you can get quite a lot of information about it.
So just on the delivering advertising on the home screen, a couple of thoughts. One, my TV should not be delivering targeted advertising to me because I paid for the television. So, two, whenever a company is actually doing things like this to target ads at you, they use this double speak in their technical explanations that say that it's to provide a better user experience and things like that, which doesn't actually mean anything. And that's exactly what ended up happening with LG's explanation. It's like, oh yeah, we're using the information to provide a better user experience.
The user experience is in fact providing you with advertising,
yeah.
But the argument, I guess, on that is always, you know, that. Okay, first step is bad. Second step is the advertising is more relevant to you, therefore it's more more relevant.
Yeah, the better user experience, take the damn ads out of the dashboard.
Yeah, most of us are watching commercial TV anyway. It's not like we don't get
it. Or midget porn.
Or midget porn. Could be an untapped monetization thing. Here's my favourite bit about LG, though. So what he did was he wrote to them and asked them to comment on what was going on. And they wrote back and said, look, sorry, we've been given some advice that since you accepted the terms and conditions, you should ask the retailer that you bought them from, not us. We think you should have been made aware of these terms and conditions at the point of sale. Now, I bought a TV recently. I don't remember getting That's right. I mean, it was just some bored dude at the electronics shop. Well, I don't think he had much to say for himself.
That actually happens, though. When you power on these LG smart TVs, you get a EULA that you have to agree to.
Yeah.
And
the EULA is the end user license agreement where you have to say, I agree or I disagree.
That's right. You also get a booklet that probably explains quite a lot of those things to you as well. And that's, you know, fine. But, I mean,
I just want to use my damn TV.
Well, I don't. I don't sign that agreement or agree to that agreement with, you know, a retailer, Jerry Harvey or whatever. You know, I agree to that with LG. So why couldn't they answer his question? And then they said, "We apologise for any inconvenience this may cause you." Well, that's delightful. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, I was about to make another reference. I really shouldn't in that context. Shall we just quickly talk about Twitter?
Yes.
Because time is running away from us. But Twitter has changed its block functionality.
And then changed it back. Flip-flop. So
what's the go with blocking? Like, I mean,
Twitter's had more flip-flops than Microsoft.
I can block a person on Twitter, can't I?
That's right.
So there's some context around this. Earlier this year, there was a big controversy that came out in the UK of some women facing quite sustained abuse on Twitter. And it really raised the bigger picture of how do you deal with abuse on Twitter. And Twitter traditionally has had a very hands-off approach to moderation of all kinds, and Twitter, you know, pretty much have sort of said, well, look, you know, just ignore it and it will go away. You can block the user. That's the extent of your recourse. They've recently put some changes in, supposedly responding to this limitation, but the changes kind of backfired. So this is a really interesting kind of twist in this tale.
So let's talk about what those changes were. So at the moment, and before this all happened as well, when you block somebody on Twitter, they can't see what you're saying. You can't see what they're saying, but more excitingly, or more concerningly perhaps, if you have blocked somebody and they come over to your profile and try to follow you or do something like that, you get a thing that says you can't do that because the user has blocked you. What Twitter did the other day was say, well, we're going to change it now so that it's just more like muting. So if you've got a Twitter client, that stops you from seeing certain hashtags or content, it's more like that. So the person that you blocked can't see that you did it. But what a lot of people have said was, well, that's not good enough because I still want them to stop doing it. In fact, someone on Twitter likened this to, for example, your security system being turned into a blindfold so that if somebody comes into your house and starts making mayhem, you can't see them, but that's okay. And, of course, it's not okay. Now, there was thousands and millions, in fact, of people tweeting about this, so much so, in fact, that Twitter's board had an emergency meeting and turned it back on straight away and said, we're very sorry.
Yay for responsive, you know, responding to consumer demand, right?
Mm. Yes, but boo for not doing something that obviously people were relying a lot on as well. I mean, if they really wanted to have that sort of thing, well, why not have both?
Twitter renowned for doing a lot of like A-B testing. Did they fail that in this case? Did they not do that or just sprung it on everybody?
I think they sprung it on everybody.
Yeah, right.
You are listening to TechnoCase here on Joy 94.9. We're covering some of the latest in technology news. We got a few SMSs. We talked a bit about TVs and them tracking you. Sarah has kindly texted in on the number 0427JOY949. If what I actually wanted to... I'll start that again. If what I actually watched actually fed into ratings and not just all the stupid... the people with the Nielsen boxes who watch Home and Away, I would totally consent to my TV watching me.
Oh, interesting.
And we also had Mark. The TV is the player, the content is the reason to watch. Advertising revenues pay for content.
Well, that's kind of a good argument still for keeping advertising in the content and not on the player.
I prefer product placement to shouting Tile Man at me.
But doesn't LG get the revenue from the advertising on the dashboard? I don't believe LG is actually producing any content for my television.
No, and even if they were, I don't think I'd watch it.
This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. You can contact us like both Mark and Sarah have. You can tweet us as well at TechnoGaze, TechnoGaze. We'll be back with more in just a few moments.
24 minutes past 12 here on Joy 94.9. You're listening to TechnoGaze. My name's Raina. We've also got Jason, Donna and the lovely Mark.
The lovely Mark.
The lovely
Why
Mark.
Why am I not lovely?
Everyone's lovely on Joy 94.9.
Everyone's fantastic.
Fabulous.
That too.
Now, Doom.
Let's talk Doom.
Wait, Doom. Wait, hang on. Why are we talking about Doom? Isn't it like 20 years old?
Exactly.
Well, that's
Why,
the thing.
Yes.
So,
hang on. it's an anniversary. Oh, wow.
Yes, it is. 20 years ago. I think I feel pretty old thinking about this as well. So Doom is, in fact, 20 years old. I think it was the 11th.
It was this week,
is the 20th anniversary of Doom being uploaded to an FTP server so that people could download it and do those good things. And it was the first true first-person shooter.
And so for those who may not have been around for that time, Doom was actually the first, I guess, 3D first-person shooter.
Wolfenstein.
Oh.
Wolfenstein is its spiritual forebear. This is fine.
I remember one of the significant things about Doom was that it was one of the first big gaming platforms to be open sourced, and it kind of created this it was the start of a whole bunch of things happening because that code was released. It was able to be used, you know, to create and a bunch of other things, and a bunch of other, you know, people were able to learn from that code base.
Yeah, that became one of the things over the last few years, which is sort of metamorphosis now. But for a good few years in the early noughties, the question that got asked of every device that came out was, can it play Doom?
Mm.
And if the answer was no, someone would very quickly turn that answer to yes.
Yes.
All because it was an open sourced engine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now that question has just turned into, can it play Angry Birds?
Sigh. But no, at a time when, it was quite groundbreaking at the time, wasn't it? I mean, Wolfenstein existed as well, and there are, you know, arguments around when, what came out first. And
well, no, they're the same company.
Pioneering. Yeah. 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 Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
So Wolfenstein was definitely beforehand, but...
Doom was the thing
that captured people's attention or imagination in some way.
There were certain things about the gameplay that made it that much more real, I guess, and just the mere fact, I remember playing it myself, you'd walk and it would actually have a walking motion to it. I don't think you got that with Wolfenstein.
No, Wolfenstein was much simpler, and it was a couple of years before Doom and didn't have all the graphical flair that Doom had. But Doom was just the next evolution of that engine, basically, and I mean, you can still see the effect that Doom had on the gaming landscape today, like the huge number of first-person shooters that are coming out.
Yep.
And also, we were talking about this in the prep earlier, the fact that Doom was actually the reason that people would cart their entire computer setup from one person's house to another.
That's right.
To play LAN games. And one of the key components of the LAN game was this action where you hit the tilde key in the game and you got this command shell called a visor that dropped down and you could type commands into. I have that running on my Mac now.
As an add-on, not necessarily to play, to shoot people.
Yeah, no, it's nothing to do with Doom.
Just to be useful.
Yeah.
Nice. So
yeah.
Doom is huge. Yeah. And, you know, started 20 years ago, and it has had a significant impact on gaming and you know, the progression of the games industry.
Mm.
Also, further into popular culture, I believe there's a Doom movie.
There is, and it features about 10 minutes of first-person footage as well.
Really?
Seriously?
Yeah.
You're admitting to having seen this film.
I have not seen the film.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just aware of its content.
I reckon 2005 was when it was released. You mentioned before you have an IMDb entry. Maybe that's the reason why you are, like, the entry for Doom.
You're on to me.
Look, I will say, because I have seen the movie, and it's okay probably to admit to seeing the movie because it is completely forgettable.
What? There's a Doom movie?
Also, I might actually have seen it and just have completely wiped this from my memory.
I think it turned up on TV a few times as filler.
No.
You know, late night
filler. I think this line's mostly filler.
It did come as a bit of a cult special, though, wasn't it? Like,
yeah.
It's very well regarded in very niche areas of the community.
Well, it's well regarded in that it's a video game movie that didn't completely suck, just mostly.
And that's his IMDb reference.
I'm so looking you up later.
You're listening to Technogaze here on Joy 94.9. We're talking about gaming for this particular segment. And Xbox One.
And PS4.
PlayStation 4's out as well.
What's going on?
Do I detect a little bit of platform rivalry there? Someone says Xbox One and Raina's like, and PS4?
Well, they're both sort of out roughly the same time. And it is that time of year when kiddies are asking Father Christmas to please put either or both of these under their tree in their stocking.
They're very similarly spec'd as well, the Xbox One and the PS4.
Does anyone remember the Wii U? No?
The what?
Fair enough.
The what?
Yeah, well, it is out too. And, you know, there's probably a different demographic that are looking for that versus the likes of Xbox One. And
or no one's looking for it because the sales figures for the Wii U have been hitting the floor.
Yes. Mm.
It's actually.
However, the sales figures for these guys are going all right.
Yeah, yeah. They're absolutely selling like great guns. Word on the street, though, is apparently, and not to sound too uncool, but apparently everyone's just waiting for decent games. So there have been quite a lot of good launch platforms, and that's fine. But they didn't really. Like a lot of platforms didn't really hit their stride until about 4 years after release, which is when most of the exciting games were coming out, the great sales figures, probably the upgrades to the console, and a lot of things really helped that.
Mm.
That's actually one of the points that we've heard about both the platforms this year, is that the launch games are just a little bit unappealing. And, I mean, so they are selling all the units that they've manufactured, but the actual enthusiasm that you hear in the tech press, and just, you know, if you ask people on the street if they're going to get an Xbox 360 or an Xbox One, they're probably going to get a 360 because there's awesome games for it.
Mm.
And the Xbox One and the PS4, they've got their launch catalogue, but then there's not a lot on the horizon for the next couple of months.
I think it's quite telling that you look at advertising at the moment, and every now and then I do tune into commercial TV, and I see ads that for games that are PS3.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it's
all about the install base.
Yeah.
The only ones that I'm interested in, so I'm kind of interested in the new Forza, and I'm also a little bit interested in Rise, Son of Rome.
Mm.
Right. Forza's driving. it's fun for driving and all the rest of it, but that's not the sort of thing where, I mean, and Rise, Son of Rome is pretty short. Neither of those things are the sort of thing that can justify for me dropping 500 on a new unit, you know what I mean? The other games, which are really kind of interesting to me, are already out on the other platform anyway, so why worry?
Yeah. Yeah.
I totally still want one, though.
Well, they're pretty powerful machines, and they've got some pretty cool features.
They have some cool features.
The background recording, so forth.
Twitch streaming, all those sorts of things.
Yes. This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9. We are... God, time is running away from us today.
As always.
We always think, this will be just a couple of minutes, and then we get talking about
rant,
it.
Ranting.
Rant machine.
If you do want to rant at us while we're in the studio here, you can do so by texting us 0427-JOY-949. You can email us on air at joy.org.au. Mushin is on the front desk and he is taking phone calls as well, 1300-JOY-949. Did I mention Twitter?
At TECHNOGAZE.
Yes.
At TechnoGaze. TechnoGaze.
TechnoGaze.
Joy 94.9. This is TechnoGaze with Donna.
Hello.
Raina.
Hi.
And Jason.
Well, hello.
And myself, Mark.
I like the way that Mark's just read us out left to right in the order in which we're sitting in the studio.
And I did this whole like...
Next time we'll do it in alphabetical order, please.
If I had a... Oh, that requires thought. If I had a camera attached to my head, it would make a lot of sense as well. It would kind of.
You keep threatening to do that, don't you?
I'm going to do it one day. I am. Mark, we should all have cameras on our heads. And
Mark keeps talking about doing.
Actually,
this.
No. We should not all have cameras on our heads. I reject that suggestion.
What about laser beams? Can we have laser beams attached to our heads?
Press of a button, we just obliterate the.
So we're talking about government surveillance, right? And cameras. Thing.
Good segue.
Thank you very much.
It's not a segue if you call attention to it.
Yes.
Oh damn.
That's why I keep doing it.
Tech giants are apparently joining forces to request that the government reform surveillance laws, possibly in the wake of Edward Snowden's revelations on how governments have been snooping on us all via our fabulous tech friends.
Oh no, they caught us. We'd better look like we're doing something about
it. Yeah, we don't like having to give the government all your data, but they keep making us do it. It's so unfair.
They could try and challenge it, couldn't they? Or perhaps they have tried to.
Well, I think this was one of the things that Twitter liked to stand up and say, well, we're actually telling people when we're being asked to give you data, and a lot of the other companies have not been doing that.
Mm.
But everyone's kind of, you know, woken up a little bit and are trying to be more transparent about it, and that's a good thing. But it's certainly raising bigger questions about, you know, the nature of collecting data, the whys, the wherefores, and the extent that they're doing it.
That's right. So if you have a look at, there's this website called reformgovernmentsurveillance.com. It actually has a lot of the requests or demands or whatever it is you want to call them that these companies are asking for. So they include people at AOL, Facebook, etc. And they're asking for things like, well, you know, more oversight, more transparency. They understand, of course, that sometimes you do need to get some information for various reasons to protect us or do law enforcement things or whatever, but they need to be a lot more narrow, a lot less, you know, higgly-piggly.
I think I kind of get the vibe that the horse has already bolted on this, though, right?
Mm.
Like, the NSA have massive data centres in various locations around the world, and they are tapping into our communication. And it may not just be the NSA themselves who have access to it. You know, this whole concept of Five Eyes, you know, which includes Australia, US, Canada,
New Zealand,
and was it the UK?
UK, yeah. It's basically the big five English-speaking countries.
Countries of the world, yeah.
Sharing data,
and,
you know.
And you wonder what that means. Like, you know, what does that mean for the future of what we do?
I'm a little bit pessimistic as to whether this will actually change anything, because I'm looking. So Raina has the site open on her computer in front of me, and it's a very pretty-looking site. It's obviously had a bit of time spent designing it, and ultimately it's going to fall on deaf ears.
I think this is more about
won't care.
PR than reform.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like a marketing campaign more than anything else.
Look, I think that's part of it, but I think maybe it's a little pessimistic to say that no one will listen to them. But to be even more pessimistic, I think more people will listen to companies with lots of cashola and lots of lobbying money and lots of influence over various state governments and whatnot than they will to regular Donna or Raina or Mark or Jason on the radio, you know what I mean?
Or crazy nerds with tinfoil hats.
Disclaimer, I am very pessimistic and cynical, in case no one's noticed.
What?
No, Jason, I thought you were rainbows and unicorns and light and optimism and happy things.
Isn't that you?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's a requirement to be here on Technogaze to be a little bit pessimistic and a little bit cynical.
And we all have very pretty, shiny tinfoil hats.
I'm making up for the rest of the sunshine, happiness and unicorns on the panel. I'm just sitting here down the end with the black cloud over my head.
Mm.
I was wondering what that was.
So, we're talking surveillance and big tech companies and so forth, but there's also been a bit of a thing with Google and cookies and finding out the naughty things we have been doing and telling Santa. Is that the story?
That's right. So yet another Snowden leak includes a presentation slide that says we've provided GCHQ, which is the UK sort of surveillance group, among other things, the Google Pref ID cookie, which is a cookie that even if you aren't a Google member or use a Google account or happen to be logged into one, you probably still have one of these cookies sitting around that tells you what ads, you know, maybe to show or selecting advertising, bits and pieces about stuff that you're looking at. And because there are a lot of sites that have Google widgets on them, there's actually quite a lot of information in this cookie.
Hmm.
And that's going to the NSA as well. Well, thanks, guys.
Well, so it's not necessarily going to the NSA, but they're using that cookie because they can pinpoint it in the HTTP traffic that they're filtering to find your traffic that way.
Yeah. Well, it certainly was provided to them at the very least.
It's provided because they're listening in on all the traffic.
There is some interesting sort of analysis done on what can make you unique. So in terms of all your web browsing behaviour, what can pinpoint you throughout your entire process of browsing the web. That includes cookies.
Mm-hmm.
It can, in fact, include just the footprint that your browser provides as a standard thing. So I think it's, what's it called? The information about what your web browser is capable of. I'm trying to think. Web developers in the room, please.
Yeah. No, but I mean, knowing things like, yeah, well, what computer are you using? Yep. Is it a tablet, etc.?
HTTP reference.
Well, so this is something that it's not just the NSA that's interested in this. It's advertisers who are interested in it as well.
Because that's right.
They'll create this cookie in order to uniquely identify you, even just based on things like the number and names of fonts that are on your system.
Yes.
And they set that cookie and they're like, I can tell when that person comes back to my site now, because most of us will install a font or two here and there. They will have a particular version of hardware, and all of this stuff can be identified by the browser and it can create a unique footprint for your site. That is probably also going into something in the pref cookie as well to make it uniquely identifiable.
I just the way marketers and advertisers think this is something that we want, that we all want to have advertising which targets us uniquely and gives us, tells us about things that they know we want. Mm. I actually get really freaked out when I know I've been searching for bicycles and I get bicycle ads. Mm. It just makes me go, ew. Mm.
Look, on the other hand, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why maybe not an advertiser, but certainly a web property would want to use that. So where I work, we have a lot of web properties and we sometimes use, maybe not this cookie, and I'd have to ask our cookie and analytics expert which method we're using, but we can actually track people coming in from one way and make educated guesses about what they're interested in. So are they a domestic user? Are they an international user? Mm. Have they dealt with us before, etc.?
Tailoring perhaps the experience.
All of these technologies can be used for good and evil, and tailoring is a good and a bad thing.
Mm. That's right. Now, thinking specifically back to what the NSA is supposed to be doing with this cookie, now in the documentation they say that they are able to single out an individual's communications and that they are using some of the time to find out who they need to remotely exploit. Doesn't say what they're actually doing, but it does say that they are going to try and attack these people's computers, which is very interesting.
This is the thing, right? So they've got massive data centres and everyone's talking about their massive payload of information about people across the board, and the tricky bit from that point is how to sort the wheat from the chaff, right? To get how to find the needle in the haystack that is the individual that they want to actually track.
Mm.
And these are the types of techniques that are possible through just tracking of metadata, what's commonly referred to as metadata of your web addresses that you're viewing, not necessarily the data that's going back and forth, but even just the requests that you make.
Mm.
You know, that's this is the
this is a kind
the closing of the loop, I guess, of, yep. of how they may well track us to that degree. It's a bit scary.
Mm, just a bit.
Also in the scary stakes.
Closer to home.
Back home, yes. Yes. Local phone and internet interceptions. Stats have been released just this last week for the year of 2012-13.
That's right.
And the total number, this is a massive number if you ask me. Federal and state governments have requested 330,640 private telecommunication and internet data requests during the course of that period, so 2012-13. That's 330,000. So yeah. What that actually, on average, equates to is 6,358, or thereabouts, if I did my math right, per week. And in other headline news on that, it's 11% of an increase from the previous year.
Mm.
So part of this is the fact that it is becoming more widely known to law enforcement that they can just scoop up this data.
Mm.
They can get a lot of this so-called metadata without a warrant. And it's become a bit like you see in crime shows, you know, let's just run those number plates. Let's just grab the telecoms data for that area where this suspected a crime took place. So they just suck it all down and then search through it for interesting things later.
It's
becoming just, hey, we can do that, let's do it. So part of the increase is just is explained by awareness by law enforcement that it's available and useful.
Well, how much of it is actually done without a warrant or without a good explainable reason, though?
A lot of it. Most of it. They don't actually need a warrant to just get the metadata.
Mm.
That's the point. And that's the, I think Senator Ludlam has been asking questions in estimates about that fact, is that this vast amount of data is being collected without warrant, without any judicial oversight. And is that a good thing? Is it helpful? Is it resulting in arrests?
Yeah.
These are the questions.
And there was a number, a figure of how many arrests or how many sort of crimes were solved as a result. I don't know if we've got that, but it's some ridiculously low number, I do believe.
Not a lot.
Mm. On the warrant side of things, so how many warrants were actually issued by federal judges or the Administrative Appeals Tribunal? 4,839 in total for that same period, which in itself, you know, that means that they can actually look into the content of emails and look into the voice, maybe your phone calls.
Right.
So
I'm hypothesizing wildly here, but with the collection of the metadata, That's the kind of, okay, so here's the haystack. They start looking through that and getting information, which then gives them probable cause to then perhaps go to a judge and get the warrant to then say, well, what was in those calls? I think that's the way it may work. I don't know, but that's my sort of supposition of how this works. So the initial thing is, is there evidence to be found? If we find something, then we can go in with a warrant.
Mm.
Someone tell us otherwise if we're wildly wrong on that.
We are not necessarily legal experts.
Correct.
Here on
making it up as we go along.
Politics experts, perhaps. It's not, yeah.
But I will tell you, though, because we're all taxpayers, right? Here's an interesting figure from that. Victorian police spend an average of $27,377 on each warrant request that they made. That's a lot of money.
Wow.
Per warrant.
Per warrant.
As opposed to the Fed's got $16,712 and New South Wales gets a bargain at $3,538.
So clearly we should be learning from our New South Wales law enforcement on best practice on how to be efficient in warranting things.
While we're talking big numbers as well, just on the original point of how many requests for data, for the metadata, out of the 330,000 odd requests, New South Wales Police topped the requesters list with 119,000.
Well, no wonder it's cheaper. They're buying in bulk.
Yeah.
It's the economy size warrant pack.
And Victoria came in down the list, but still had 64,000 requests of those.
What I find really interesting in this article, and we're actually referencing an article in The Age, that there were 116 warrants relating to police investigations of terrorism,
right,
with 76 warrants issued to the Federal Police, 39 to New South Wales Police, and one to Victorian Police. Now, given that terrorism is the big bogeyman that has justified a lot of the increase in surveillance and our loss of privacy, the fact that the warrants, those numbers are so small compared with the 330,000 requests, I think that's a little bit questionable.
Technogiz. Yes, that's right. You're listening to Joy 94.9. We're covering... this is Technogaze, isn't it?
It is.
We like to talk about technology. We couldn't let the week...
This is Mark's rushed voice.
I don't... Actually, there's no need for a rushed voice. The NBN, though, is a bit of a sore topic for us this week.
And a big topic.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, says Uncle Malcolm.
I'm actually so sad about this, I don't even want to talk about it.
The context, of course, is that the coalition, our new coalition government, has reviewed what they'll do with the NBN that Labor kicked off during their time.
And as you say, we've gone from national broadband network to no broadband network.
At least they don't have to change the name.
Yeah, right.
That's right.
There were a number of various names floating around the interwebs from all of this. Fraud band is another one
that's
come up as well.
So the short version of what happened, so they've done the review, etc., and the press conference happened, and they've said, well, actually, we're going to build even less of the NBN than we promised before.
Mm-hmm.
P.S., it's going to cost more than we said. Oh, and by the way, you know how before the election they were saying that it was going to cost $90 billion or something if they kept on with the fibre to the premises?
Yep.
Well, actually, it's considerably less. Whoops.
Wait.
You mean they overstated something leading up to the election? No way.
No.
They did. So, a bit worrying. Mm. Most of the rest of us will get a pretty shonky version of the NBN based on the old copper and obviously still has a lot of issues.
I'm getting depressed.
Sorry.
I don't want to talk about it.
NBN Co. will still be in existence. But they... They've actually recommended that the government should not try to regain control of the copper network based on cost and risk.
Mm.
So NBN Co. will still be in existence, but Co. will no longer mean company or corporate. It now means cooperative.
Oh.
Yes.
A coalition stooge.
Well, it is a shame, isn't it? I was looking forward to it, and it always seemed a bit of a pipe dream because it was a long time coming under the Labor government of the NBN.
Isn't a shame. This is absolutely kind of cutting off our nose to spite our face. This is telling Australia that the digital age isn't happening and is not important, and, you know, it's... Yeah, I just don't want to talk about it.
I mean, It feels like maybe a slight overreaction to say the digital age is not happening, but I sort of wonder if it means that if governments want to do major projects like this, they're now going to have to make sure that they actually get done within their term of government.
Well, there was never going to be any chance of that ever happening. I mean, with the way that the Labor Party's popularity was going in the last one, that would ever happen. And especially, sorry.
I was just going to say this is often the case with long-term projects, so major infrastructure projects. If you don't have bipartisan support, then it's very likely they're not going to be
right. And that's the key, is that so much politics was played with this issue when it should have really been something that was beyond and above politics, that our major party should have gone into this in a bipartisan way and said, look, what is a sensible plan? But that never happened. And now we're not getting it at all.
Mm. It's a bit of a crappy Christmas present from the coalition.
Christmas presents, holiday gifts.
But if you want to make your nerd loved one happy...
Or distract them.
Here's some shiny bling.
Yeah, so obviously we all have gifts we want for ourselves, perhaps, or nerds that we would like to buy things for.
So we did a bit of a whip around, didn't we, earlier on, and sort of went through a couple of ideas of what we would like.
What we would like, or what we'd like.
Looking at the first item on that list, I'm not sure about that. I don't know if we all want Star Trek pajamas, but if you do want them, they are out there. And if you do have a Star Trek fan in your family, it might be an idea.
They come in yellow, blue, and red.
They're next generation uniforms.
How is it that you know that, Donna?
I'm not saying.
You can get original series versions as well.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's better.
I think I'd prefer those.
What else have we got on our Christmas list?
Smartwatches. We put that on the list.
Put that on the list, but I hate them.
we have talked about them a lot this year on TechnoGaze, though. And I think there's a lot of people that would be pretty excited to see a Pebble maybe under their tree, or even a Galaxy Gear.
Can I just clarify, that's a Pebble smartwatch and not a lump of coal.
A lump of coal. I got you a smooth river rock.
The gadget thing is interesting. We were also kind of discussing, you know, in terms of consumer technology, things like phones are perhaps not a great gift because you've generally got to do a plan and you've got to have the phone number thing sorted out and there's contracts and what sort of thing. But the tablets and a lot of the small ones are perhaps just the perfect shiny gizmo.
I know a lot of families who are thinking about getting tablets for their kids now that the tablets are getting a little bit cheaper and the kids are constantly stealing mum and dad's tablet all the time and maybe putting their grubby fingers on it and occasionally dropping it. Sometimes it's a bit better not to risk the important workplace gadget.
My 4-year-old nephew is constantly using his mum's iPad and she can no longer actually use it.
It's amazing how those things are so kid friendly.
That's right.
Just out of intuition. Programmable LED Christmas lights.
Of Christmas things.
Well, so this might actually be an interesting way to decorate your house with that decoration and that idea that you've always wanted. Because, when you go down the street and you see all these houses decked out and Christmas lights, you're like, how did they make it do that? I wish I could make it do this. Now you can. You can program them.
Yes. Indeed. Anything else that should be? Portable Bluetooth speakers.
I've been thinking about getting some of these, actually, because I have decided that if I'm sitting down in my lounge room late at night writing articles, then I would actually like to have some music around me that doesn't come from a really rubbish speaker in my phone.
And I've been seeing them, to be honest, on pretty much every shelf. There's a shop that I go into probably twice a week that just it's sitting there staring at me. And how cool is it? Like, if as well as what you're talking about, Jason, you want to go down to the beach or whatever, take some tunes with you and... be one of those fabulous young people you see enjoying music on the beach like you see on advertising, then why not?
Well, one that I saw is was a Kickstarter project come good. It's the Jar Jar, I think that's how you say it, or maybe it's Yah Yah, I don't know. Anyway.
I hope it's Yah Yah.
Yah Yah pressure sensitive stylus for the graphic-y, design-y kind of geeks in your life. Started as a Kickstarter project by a Brisbane dude, which has been shipping to its pledges, but is also now widely available.
Yeah, I'd love it. That's actually just for anyone who's listening who might want to buy me something for Christmas.
1,024 levels of pressure right now.
There's quite a few pressure-sensitive styluses out there.
I think
there.
We just went somewhere different.
No, you did.
Deary me. Another winner that I think is always good is headphones.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Always blowing through those, ripping out cords.
I'd like some yellow ones if anyone's listening.
Absolutely. And why not finish off the show? We are getting to that time of year, but a favourite hashtag of ours that popped up this week.
I loved this one.
5-word tech horrors.
Oh, the worst things you can think of in 5 words or less, or 5 words, sorry, that have happened to you. What are you, some of your favourites, guys?
Can I go with my favourite first?
Yes.
The code is self-documenting. Oh. I say this as a developer. Yeah, it's always annoying.
Oh.
And please install Internet Explorer update.
Oh, yuck. How about I accidentally hit reply all?
Security updates are not important.
Oh.
I'm a social media consultant.
Oh, no.
I bought this tablet from Aldi.
Off by one error. Did you get it?
Yeah, that was good.
Did you get it?
Dude, you're getting a Dell.
Now, that's about all we have time for in today's show. We hope you enjoyed this third last episode for the year of Technogaze.
Mm.
If you would like to check out previous episodes or peruse what you may have missed in today's show, you can do so by getting onto our page, joy.org.au/technogaze. Thank you, Donna, for coming in today.
Thanks, Mark. Always fun.
Thank you, Raina, of course.
Always.
And Jason, of course, thank you as well.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Have a great weekend. We'll catch you next week.
Hope you don't have too many 5-word tech horrors in your week.
Oh, we have a few more.
It happens only in production.
We need to gamify it.
You don't need a tester.
We designed it by committee.
You're going to use SharePoint.
Let's teach programming with Java. You
my nephew builds that. Websites.
Oh, yeah. I've had that one.
I know a good programmer.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.